So welcome again to the Overseas Athlete Podcast. Today, I'm delighted to bring Jory Davis on the podcast. Jory is a professional basketballer who's played in 9 countries, and she's also the founder of WeVolve, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Jory, good morning for me. I'm here in Australia. Good afternoon potentially for you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good, and good morning. It's amazing the different time zones around the world, but nice to connect with you.
You too. I've got no doubt if you've played in 9 countries, you have a lot of valuable information and education to share. So I'll let you kick it off if you just want to let us know, you know, who you are, where you're from, and how you became an overseas athlete.
Yeah. So I'm Jory Davis, born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana, the place of jazz music and good Creole food. So definitely check it out when you get a chance. I have been playing abroad for 13 years, 9 countries, as Chris told you all. And, you know, kind of started my journey, truthfully, being kind of a world traveler, or let's say an expathlete, as you say. I went to high school, my freshman year of high school in London. My stepdad was on an international assignment, so my first taste of being international was in the UK. Went back to high school in Rochester, New York, graduated college from Indiana University, was drafted. And then, of course, like many of us, especially the women's players, with lack of roster spots and opportunities and teams, we go abroad. And that's where my journey started. In Israel was the first country I played in. And I've been there ever since, enjoying it. And it was through my journeys and reflecting abroad which led me to go into the sport tech space and become an entrepreneur.
Oh, fantastic. Now, I'll go back initially. So with women's basketball, obviously, you know, when you think of basketball, you think of America, it's the biggest and best place for it. But are there very limited opportunities for females in the game over there?
You mean in the States, correct?
Yeah.
I think obviously college is a unique element, a unique opportunity that maybe overseas in Europe and other countries abroad don't really have. So of course, when early on, we do have a lot of opportunities, but then when we get to the pro level, doesn't compare to abroad, where they have different levels that you can play pro and continue playing with possibly make a little money. So that's where the difference between both sides kind of shifts. But of course, the WNBA is trying to expand to have more teams. But outside of W, there is no G League. There is no semi-pro league, really. They have some that are emerging, but many of them are more recreational. You're not really paid. And it's not really something that everyone can take seriously compared to the men. For women, it's still something that is evolving, and they're trying their best to create more opportunities, but it's still a better opportunity for those that don't play in the W to go abroad.
And is that then, so because we have a lot of Australians obviously that go to college in America for lots of different sports, it's a great system, so it's a good place obviously to play basketball, but then once you've say finished that apprenticeship or you've got a good level, there's a lot more opportunity for you through Europe or elsewhere.
Yeah, I think many European players, again, from Australia as well, they're enjoying the opportunity to travel, to play, get education, of course. But most of all, I think sometimes the competition level, depending on where they can go and play, could be better than some of the lower leagues in their country. So if they feel they're not quite ready to go sit the bench in the top league in Spain or Australia, they would prefer to go play, continue developing in America. And so I think it is a great opportunity for some players. Of course, there is no one way or one right way to do it. For some, it's better to stay home. For some, it's better to travel. But again, I think both options are great depending on the player and their journey.
And how did your first move come about then? Israel obviously would probably be a difficult country, you know, to go to. How did you find it? How did you find, firstly, the opportunity? And then how old were you and how did you find the transition from obviously life in the U.S. to life in Israel?
Yeah, I was, I think, 21, 22. Once I was preparing to leave to go and play in Israel, of course, I found the opportunity through my agent that I had at the time. She had a number of players that she had signed, different Americans that were already going to Israel every year. And so that was opportunity she sent my way. I had one option and it was Israel. So of course, I mean, I took it because what I didn't know anything else. And of course, it was very different. I loved it, by the way. I really enjoyed Israel. It's a vibrant place, beautiful water, beautiful beaches, good food. So I enjoyed it. But of course, it was very different. You know, their culture is different. Of course, everything's a little smaller wherever you go abroad compared to America. So the pace and, you know, the size of things. When things closed, it was kind of a culture shock. I wasn't prepared. I did have a card that I was using. And for some reason, I don't know why I didn't think of this. Now that I'm older, I know, like, how didn't you do that? But I went to use my card and it was like, boop, the bank had totally shut it down because I didn't prepare for that. So there were a lot of things as far as how to deal with currency, you know, how to navigate driving when everything is in Hebrew, all the street signs. So it was kind of like a guessing game of remembering street by street exactly how to get home and not veering from that at all. So it was interesting, sometimes scary because of course you're still in Israel and making sure you know what areas to go in and whatnot. But all in all, it was a very fun time and a time of major growth for me.
I think that probably, like, you touched on a few things there that I'll pick up on, but I think initially, like, I think it might come down to the person you are as well. Like, some people could go there and just completely freak out and need to go home pretty quickly. And others, like yourself, obviously take it as like an opportunity to grow and learn and just embrace it and make the most of it. Have you seen both? Have you seen girls come over or travel overseas and leave within, you know, a couple of weeks or a month?
Yeah, I've seen girls book their own flight and leave without telling the team, just because they're like, I'm not doing this. I can't do this. I think it definitely is something an individual needs to be open-minded. They have to be prepared to understand that it is completely different than America, or wherever country they come from. Of course, going from one European country to another is a norm for most of the Europeans. But you know, it is something that requires you to have a certain type of personality that you can find success and longevity abroad, especially for the American athletes. If you're not open-minded and, you know, you already have these preconceived notions, it is very hard to adapt. And so adaptability is key to be able to play this game and maintain a lifestyle abroad. And so I think that is a key, but I have seen players leave immediately. I've seen players deal with major depression, even though they stayed. They were just getting by because they just were not happy. And so seeing different ways of how players have tried to cope with the homesickness and really getting through the difference between America and playing abroad.
No, definitely. You can see how it would be a huge shock to people that couldn't deal with it. When you mentioned earlier about you found it through your agent and you knew that she had sent other girls there, looking back now and obviously, you know, the business that you're in, was that important to know that? Because I guess unless you know the agent personally, you never know what you're getting into. But because she had a track record of sending girls to Israel, American, did that make you feel more confident and comfortable that that's where you were going?
Yeah, I also knew a player that I was real good friends with who played at Illinois University, which is right down the road from IU, Indiana. So she had played a year before me, not in Israel, but she had already been overseas and she was headed there as well. And she knew a couple other players that were playing, going to be heading to Israel, a couple other names I knew had signed. So it made me more comfortable that I knew other players that would be in the country. If I didn't have that, I think that would have been a little bit more nerve-wracking compared to just my agent sending people there. And actually I didn't really have a way of visually or like checking the stats of that agent to ensure she signed them. Of course she told me she signed them, but how do I really know for a fact that she signed all these people? Because the lack of transparency on the side of agents isn't really there. Is really kind of in their hands of what they say. So I think for me, it was more so knowing some of the players that had already committed to signing to the country that made me feel comfortable.
And did you find that you had, either through the agent or the team or the club that you went to, like, I guess, a support network or people you could speak to help you, whether it be with like that, making sure you get paid, making sure the accommodation's right? Is that something you would do through your agent or through the club, or is that just sort of vary from club to club, country to country?
It varies from club to club. I would say across the board, there's not much support in that regard. Sometimes you'll have a manager from the women's side, of course, that will go above and beyond, but they will let you know that it's above their pay grade because many of them are underpaid for the amount of care that they might choose to invest in the players because they're understanding or just because they're good people. And I've come across those managers of clubs where they do try to go above and beyond to really just help you adapt and adjust. But the agent most times, especially for Americans, are back in America. So they're not there with you. They're not going through what you go through every day. If something's wrong, if the Wi-Fi is broken, quite frankly, they can hear you complain, but there's nothing they really can do. You're there now, and it's kind of up to you to figure it out. And so I'd say there's not a strong support system. Again, that's where being adaptable, resourceful, and having the right mindset set comes in handy to have a long career playing abroad as an American athlete.
And did you also find one thing you mentioned with the agent and the deal that you were offered while you were in America? I'm assuming that might have happened. Was that delivered on, like what you were promised in a way? Did you get everything you were expecting in regards to money, accommodation, you know, those types of things?
Yeah, I think that first contract, everything was delivered on, but you don't know what the house will look like, what the room would look like, what the car will look like. You're kind of blind going in. So for me, there were things like I didn't know I would get paid in USD cash and then have to figure out how to get shekels for when I needed money while I was there. And then what do I do with my money? I didn't have a bank. No one went with me to the bank to open up an Israeli bank account to be able to send money. So it was those types of things were totally not taken care of. I had an agent and that was not taken care of. She didn't have any plan or lifestyle guide set for me, despite sending players over and over again to this country. So there were some things that I just was not prepared, not that it breached the contract, but it wasn't clear that these things would be my responsibility. The housing, it said shared home, but it wasn't clear exactly what that shared home would look like and everything. So those are some of the things where, you know, as you get older, you try to be very clear and ask more questions. But when you're a rookie and you have no idea what to do or how to advocate for yourself, all of your trust is in the agent. And obviously the agent doesn't really, you know, care in some cases because they're just used to shuffling players, finalizing the deal and used to players truthfully figuring it out. So they know regardless, you'll figure it out, not, you know, without understanding that the mental health and everything, the stress that comes with having to do that is all put on the player.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. It's you know, one of the major reasons why I do this podcast is to understand these things, because, you know, for the next 20, 21-year-old Jory Davis that wants to go overseas, it's like, all right, I need to think about these things, because if an agent doesn't tell you, you know, you need to find somewhere and ask questions. The banking's an important one. Obviously, we also have a lot of players that struggle with banking. And as you say, the first thing being just your American card, not letting, you know, your local bank know that you're going overseas, because if they see a transaction in a foreign country, they're more than likely going to put a stop on it, thinking it's some type of fraud.
Yeah, I mean, money management is a big one, especially as you continue to play abroad, different countries, taxes. It is a lot to manage. And then, of course, ensuring that you add the right language in your contract to put as much pressure as possible on the club to ensure that they're paying you in the best form possible, and that you're not leaving it up for guessing, or when you get there, assume you can take care of it, because that's not the best way to move. You have to make sure that at least it's in the contract. So yeah, I think that's key. And of course, in having a good network, either through your agent or relying on your community to find people on the ground that you can trust to go with you. If you have to do some of this alone, like open a bank account. Sometimes it is better to have someone, even if the club manager is with you, because again, that manager works for the club. And if things and documents for the bank are in different languages, you really don't know what you're signing. So all of those things are for sure scary. But it's something you have to do. And again, improving up on your network and finding people in the community you can trust, whether you be in China, Japan, or Italy, that might be able to come with you during these key things when you're transitioning to living 8 months or 10 months in that country. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a really important point. And I can see what you mean there with the club might try and help you set it up, but you still don't know if it's in your best interests. Whereas I guess having maybe another American player or even you now, you know, who has this experience, if a young American was to join you in one of these countries, at least you could show them, all right, this is what you need to do. This is where you need to go. This is how you set up your banking. Yeah, very, very key.
For sure.
Yeah. Awesome. No, that's some great information there. Thank you. So what, where to from there? How did you leave Israel and where did you go next?
Yeah. So, after Israel, actually, I finished top 10 scoring in the league. My agent at the time, it was getting late and, I made a big decision. You know, I had wanted to go back into training camp for the W. She wasn't being very responsive. So I made a quick decision. I fired her at the time. Now knowing what I know, it was not a good timing of firing. Again, try to tell players when you want to make a decision of changing agents, you have to do it in a timely manner. And at that time, I didn't do it in a timely manner because by the time I could get a new agent, it didn't make sense because now that agent needed to start working for me. And in that regard, by the time I fired my old agent, it was not a good time. So actually, I ended up being home after being drafted. Having a great senior year in Indiana, playing in Israel, finishing top 10 in a very strong league at that year. I ended up being home all the way until Christmas. I was actually working at a company called Paychex and just training, waiting for my next gig. And that's when I changed agents and found someone to get me a job in Romania. So I went to Romania for the remainder of that season. And from there, of course, finished half a season and then went on to Switzerland to play. And that's where, you know, I kind of kept moving along from there. Switzerland, Italy, went on to play in Spain, back to Italy, Greece. And I did a few summer leagues in New Zealand and then Puerto Rico. And then, of course, played in France and then Spain again. And so that's kind of how my journey evolved over time.
It's amazing. That's so cool. It's really cool. And is that because the leagues, like the amount of time the leagues run, so you can maybe play for a couple of months in one country and then a new league will be starting in a different country, so you can sort of play all year round? Is that the sort of thinking behind it, or most of the year?
Yeah, so now there are new leagues emerging, like New Zealand, Puerto Rico, Mexico has a new league that's been around for, I think, 2 years now. This is its second year, maybe the third year. So usually by the time the European season is finishing, players will leave there and then go to Mexico or a New Zealand. The Puerto Rico league starts a little later, so you can go and play in that league. It's different leagues that are starting at different times. Australia has a league that goes on right now. It's not their most competitive league, but it's a league they have during the summertime for us in America, but it's winter for you all. There's different opportunities now for players, especially women, to play all year round. Or if they want to do short stints with a team, there are opportunities where you can play in certain cups. So like in Dubai in Africa, they have certain cups where you might go for a month or 2 months and then be done with your obligations with that team.
Yeah. That's fantastic. It's great that there's so many opportunities now. And do you find that there's a level of pay now that what would be a rough sort of salary for a player going somewhere through Europe or say to Puerto Rico, Mexico for a month that they could earn potentially as a, you know, maybe a rookie or even then as a more experienced player, you know, still looking to make a living from the game?
Yeah. I mean, it varies. Again, Very much it varies. And that's one of the issues, the lack of pay transparency, which causes this large gap between what players are paid. But and it depends on your nationality. So American or European or a local talent, sometimes the local talent can be paid underpaid, or sometimes they're paid more if they are the most talented local talent. So your value is high. But you can get paid from $1,000 a month up to, you know, the top players abroad can be making, you know, $25K a month for playing for a Fenerbahce or something like that. So again, it varies a lot from, again, $1K to $25K a month. Obviously, per month, that's what you would get paid a month. So again, it definitely is a big gap. But I would say, you know, usually if you're in those South Americans, so Mexico and et cetera, you know, it's some players, it's like maybe 2.5 to, you know, 8K, 9K. That's the range when you go to South America per month. So again, it's a big gap. It varies. And no one really knows, truthfully, because there's no public space. It's not transparent. Mm. So everything is a guess. Everything is hearsay. And, you know, you're just not sure when to push and when not to push, because they can say they don't have that or they can't afford that. And you kind of have to choose if you want to wait it out or, you know, take what they say they can actually pay. And so that's the hard part when it comes to salaries, men or women abroad outside of NBA, WNBA, as their salaries are obviously public.
Yeah. Yeah. Less regulations, I can imagine, in a lot of, you know, small European countries and even South America. It's like, this is what you're getting. And as you said before, you might get it in a brown paper bag and cash. You just don't know.
Yeah. It's pretty, to say the, all of these federations are governed by FIBA, which is technically this professional governing body, to say that this is what is allowed. And trust me, there are a number of podcasts that players are saying this is what's happening. So they know it's going on. To realize that they're not doing anything to take action and change it in 2024 is beyond me. But certain countries are changing. Australia, of course, the women have a CBA there. They have their union, and some places, some federations are really doing a great job of shifting and being more transparent. But again, there's still a lot of work to do around Europe in general and also in Asia.
And just on that with the Australian side and say the players union, being an American and a basketballer, as an overseas US athlete, do you have anything that you can sort of rely on from a support point of view? Or is it mainly down to you athletes and agents sort of working together?
Pretty much, like, as an American, because we move so much state to, country to country, we don't really have a union. Now, some unions will say, okay, we welcome the American talent. You know, we can become members of the union for that year. But some unions really aren't built for us. They're built for their local national team level talent. And so it leaves us kind of like there, but not really taken care of. And so there is no real entity. Some people have tried to start a union, but again, they run into the same issues that now we're trying to create rules and regulations for a group of people that are playing 1 year in Italy, 1 year in Spain, 1 year in France. And those rules and regulations are different in each country. So now what? So, it's a big problem. The talent that goes abroad is growing. Yeah. The same with talent that leaves from this side of the other side of the world and comes to America for college. So I think it's just a space that we need to just have more open-minded, innovative individuals and start to kind of shift the rules to match what is happening naturally with this borderless game that we have now.
Yeah, no, it is very much so. I can see it, how it could be difficult, but I can imagine as well how nice it would be for you guys to, you know, to have a central body as such that can help you while you're moving around. Even for, you know, little things like that, like banking or someone to check over your contracts, or, you know, just make sure that what you're asked for or what you're supposed to be getting is actually what you're getting.
Yeah, definitely.
And so through all of your experiences in like many different European countries, what did you find was like, what did you enjoy the most? Where were the best countries to play basketball? Where were the worst or the most challenging? And what were the biggest sort of challenges you faced?
Yeah, I think the best part about being an international athlete is definitely the ability to live in different countries and not just visit them. You're living there. I think there's another level of knowledge and education you gain by actually living there than just visiting for a week or so. And so I'm really blessed, and I really appreciate that experience that I've had. Italy has been my best country. Even though there are some wonderful countries. I mean, Valencia playing there was amazing. Greece and Athens, definitely very close. Really enjoyed Greece. So I've really enjoyed the Mediterranean countries that I've been able to play in. It was wonderful. But then New Zealand was magical. Just beautiful surfing and Raglan, you know, the beach views and sunsets. So I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the food and the sunsets and the water. That's been great. Challenges, of course, or I think with everyone, you know, the language barriers, being misunderstood by coaches. You have to learn how to be more patient because there's a language barrier. So my mannerisms, or they might assume I feel the way and that's not how I felt. And due to lack of communication, you know, they might make assumptions. I might make assumptions. So the challenge has always been communicating and ensuring that people get a chance to really know who I am. You know, being a African-American woman, and there aren't that many of us just immersing themselves in the culture in Europe. Of course, many have to rely on what they see from TV or maybe what they hear, and not really knowing that I am an individual and I'm different than everything you might see or hear in the media. And so I think that's always been, you know, not a challenge. It's just something you have to get over and take time to really overextend yourself to ensure people know who you are, Jory, not just my persona. And I have dreadlocks and the assumptions that come with those things. And maybe I'm aggressive on the court, but that's not who I am as a person. So I think that's always the challenge for anyone, any person of color, truthfully, when you go around Europe or around the world, it's having to get rid of those stigmas and really communicate and get to know people so they can also get to know you, and kind of throw away the stigmas or misconceptions that they might know about a group of people that you maybe fall under.
And have you found, and I'm guessing, I'd assume not as much, but do you find that sometimes clubs you go to, they might have a translator that can sort of help bridge the gap? Or is it just pure luck that someone is there that can speak, you know, a couple of languages from place to place?
Never had a translator. It's either the coach knows a little broken English or the manager knows English, but I've never been on a team where they had a dedicated translator. Never. I know in Asia, I think a lot of them usually have a translator. I heard in Russia, some of the top teams have a translator, and possibly just because the languages are, you know, different.
And so different. Yeah, so they do
that. But in Europe, never had a translator. Most times, as soon as you land, they're like, oh, you got to learn French. Oh, you got to learn Italian. Oh, you need to learn. I'm like, that's it. Like, it's like, oh yeah, I'll learn it in a week. You know, it's like, no, that's impossible.
And do you find then, so have you found yourself in all these different countries just picking up little bits of the language to just try and help you get by, like either just ordering breakfast or, you know, being able to go to a coffee shop and just order something in that local language?
Yeah. I mean, of course, you start to just how to say hi, bye, good morning, good night, you know, how to order my coffee, my espresso, how to say some basic things that you might need for food. And, you know, you naturally can pick up on it. Some languages, of course, like Hebrew was just difficult. I mean, that's like, I can't even, my mouth won't even move correctly to say the word. I can't even get my tongue to move the way they move their tongue to let the words roll off their mouth. So some languages are just like very hard, and you don't know where to begin. But of course, like in Israel, they also spoke English, many places. So, for the most part in Tel Aviv, that wasn't an issue for me, but, you know, possibly in some places it could get a little bit more difficult, like Romania, or, you know, when you're initially going to France, French for me is a little more difficult than if we say it's Italian or Spanish.
Yeah. And with all those different countries and moving around, you're obviously in the Eurozone for the most part, but how did you go with visas? Did you need to obtain your own visas to move around all these countries, or did your agent help with that, or does the club help with that?
Usually once you sign the contract, then the club should send over. Well, the club has to go to the federation to first, you know, send you and make you a official player. Then that's when they would send over the documentation to allow you to get your visa. But then from there on the state side, I have to travel to the consulate, do all the paperwork, make the appointment, etc. Of course, my agent helps to some degree. You know, here's the website, you need to do this. Or if I need the paperwork I have to fill out, you have to put like the president and their address and stuff. He'll like give me that stuff. But for the most part, it is something that you have to take care of. In some cases, there's issues with visas arising as the new rule, I think, has passed, where now it's more strict for U.S. citizens will need visas to go abroad. Some teams will have players come and they don't do the visa. And so I've known players to find out as they're leaving a team that they've been there illegally. And, you know, you never know what can happen. So there's a lot of issues. Just recently, a player was in Turkey, I think, this season. And it found out she was there. She was actually going back to Turkey for a season. And they told her she couldn't come because they found out she was in Turkey illegally the past season and she didn't have a visa. So sometimes the agent doesn't even know. Most of the agents that are from the States, they don't know. They have partners that sometimes don't take care of those things. And so, yeah, there's a big gap between agents and all the other things that go on with our lifestyles, far as visas, far as places to go, money management, internationally, all the things that you need for your life. Maybe some guys get stipends to go and find their own apartments for their families. You know, what real estate people are you using? Most times they use someone from the team. You don't know if they're overcharging you. So now you're just giving the money back to the team. It's a lot of things that are not transparent. And so, the lifestyle management and management for our careers in general abroad is something that is lacking. And it's not something that the agents, truthfully, in my opinion, are helping with tremendously. Yeah.
And there's probably a lot to take in, I guess, for an agent. They've got one role to do. And as much as they want to be across a lot of things, they can't be across everything. So you do need a very strong network probably then of people that deal, as you say, real estate, you know, currency management, whether it's tax advice, legal advice for people to check your contracts. So having a very strong network would be very key.
Definitely.
Yeah. And we'll get on to your side of the business now and what you founded with WeVolve. If you want to let us know a little bit about, you know, what it is, why you started it and how it helps people.
Yeah. So WeVolve and WeVolve, we are building a digital platform, an athlete management ecosystem that in a sense uses data, public data, community source data, to enable athletes to make better career decisions, compared to just simply relying on their agent or searching for answers on Google where they don't exist. We're now building the ecosystem where now we have a SaaS solution where we can bring in different stakeholders, bring in service providers, but also aggregate data and data from the community around contracts, team history, agent hiring history. And basically our goal is to use artificial intelligence mixed with that human intelligence in order to automate and streamline the process of helping players when it comes to decision making around the contract. decision making around who do they work with when they need tax help or financial help or mental health help, whatever it might be. But also eventually having a non-biased partner that they can rely on for the things that they might have gaps in for their career management and lifestyle management. And in a sense, that's what we're building the digital platform for. And that's why we're finding strategic partners that also want to help us to execute upon that seamless plan. And so that's that. I started it because, hey, we've been on this podcast hearing different things, struggles. That's why I started it, because it didn't exist. It was no hit at agents. Agents have a job. Of course, you know, I felt they were getting 10%. With that 10%, you know, that should cover some stuff to help us. But it wasn't, you know, their time was limited, especially with boutique agencies. And so they just couldn't provide the full service that they claimed to provide. And that's where I felt there was an opportunity to really create something as, you know, AI, machine learning, et cetera, was growing. And that's why we created Wevolve.
And how long has it been sort of up and running or in the works?
So it's been 5 years since I initially sat down and started to think about the idea. I started more so with community, just reaching out to players, trying to have small group meetings, wanting to do retreats. And then, of course, it over time, as my idea and resources evolved, that's where it became into the actual app, which is currently in App Store and Google Play. We have about 150 players on the platform right now. We have about 30 LOIs from service providers. Many of them are former athletes. Some of them are former NFL players, to former Olympians that have micro communities now that will be able to host their communities on Wevolve, that have all truthfully gone through some of the same pain points. Many of us, for so long, everyone assumes the agent is who manages everything for us, but that's not true. And it's showing to be not true for a lot of different sports. So, you know, we're just quietly building our community to assemble and really start to shift how we access information, knowledge, which ultimately gives us leverage to make better decisions and more transparent decisions.
I know it's a fantastic idea. It's, as I said, with this podcast, it's a bit the same. It's obviously not as far ahead as where you are, but it's for that reason. It's for the, you know, the next young Australian or young American that has to go to Romania or Israel with absolutely no idea what to expect. This is good because they just need to educate themselves. Simple things like the banking, how to manage your currency, what to do with your money, how do you get your rental? Yeah, it's just little sort of everyday things, but you don't think they're that important until you're stuck there and you go, wow, I wish I'd known more about this. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a lot though. And that's the beauty of having, that's why we say management ecosystem. We're not trying to build everything. But there's so many different parts that there are other people building and doing great things like yourself for the same reason we're doing it. And that's the key. How do we find those that really want to build to authentically help the athlete? Because it's not easy. And like, yeah, renting a car. Some players don't even know, hey, I need a credit card, you know, I don't like, and then they go with a debit card. And it's like, well, this is the fee if you use a debit card. And like, whoa, I can't afford to drop that much on a deposit. So it's like those little things. You know, how do you get to that point?
Yeah, you can't get a credit. I had an Australian who went to play in America, football it was, and he said he had no credit file, no credit history in America, so he had to pay cash for everything. So you end up paying more. And as you said, you can't even rent something and put a card down as a deposit or a security deposit because you can't get one.
So, no one's talking about it.
It's so true. And it's even something you mentioned there, like, as a player, you train, you know, 1 to 2 hours a day. Your game might be 2 hours on a Saturday. You've still got 16, 18 free hours per day that's off court and off field and out of the gym and out of rehab, you know. So there's so much more that goes on than just playing, you know, than just playing the game. to help you settle in foreign countries.
I mean, you're not. Look.
And even with travel, like as you mentioned, you're traveling a lot as well. You know, travel takes it out of you. It does. It takes a lot of energy out of you. It makes you tired. How do you sort of, from a playing point of view, is there anything you've found over the years of doing this that's helped you just manage like jet lag and fatigue and how you sort of stay on top of it? Yeah. Yeah, it's important. Someone, as I said, the girl that I spoke to yesterday, Australian basketballer, she was the same. She's like, she does hot yoga. That's her thing when she's overseas, hot yoga. It just gets her centered. She gets her breath work right. And she feels that when that's in tune, her performances in training and on the court are also in tune.
A map. I need to add those locations to the map for us.
I'll definitely put you in touch with her for sure. And the whole Weavile thing, and something you touched on in one of the comments you made, was that something that you're starting to build towards for obviously when you finish playing? Is that like just forward planning? And do you advise, even though you have to focus on your game and performance to keep winning contracts and getting paid, but having the money that you're earning sort of go towards something or save a little bit to put towards something for when you finish.
Yeah. Gives you more.
Yeah. That's a good point because, as you said, you've been doing this for 5 years, but you're still playing. So it's fantastic to have it on the side. You can build it without the pressure of needing it to make money to pay bills every week because you've got that covered. And also, yeah, the athlete sort of management of private equity deals and companies wanting to support athletes on this journey is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We've got a few here I've seen recently in Australia where they're launching and it's government backed, and there's a lot of investors on how to support athletes, especially, you know, like Olympians that don't earn good money, but are trying to make it to the Olympics, you know. So it's a big area. And with the networking side, obviously traveling around, you would have met lots of people, but do you also find social media is good for that? And do you find a particular platform that you've had a lot of success with? I've definitely seen a huge influx of, I think, athletes and a lot more people within sports in the last 12 months on LinkedIn. Like, I use it every day. I have done for about 2 years, but I have noticed a big increase. It's just noticeable. I'm the same. We use TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, but that's just to post stuff so people know that you're alive, basically, and you're doing something. But all the business and all the sort of people that we get come through LinkedIn. You know, all of our clients, all of our guests, it's all sort of through LinkedIn. And so I have seen a big change in that, which is good because it's a great platform. I really enjoy it. Yeah. No, fantastic. Well, Jory, I'll leave it there so you can get on with the rest of your day. I will put you in touch with the Hot Yoga Australian so that you can get in touch with her and find out. But no, thank you very much for your time today. Really, really invaluable stuff and great educational information. So I appreciate your time. Thank you. No, you're welcome. I'll